Hello, and welcome to episode 212 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa, and I'm joined, as always, by Matthew Figuera.
By your astutely handsome co-host.
Me. Astutely handsome, bearded co-host.
That's me.
Bearded dragon.
This is a good-looking podcast, let's be honest.
I mean, we can't complain here. If you're only listening to the audio, you're missing out.
You're missing out on some real eye candy here. And by eye candy, I mean my beautiful Ori plush behind me. Come on.
I know. It's phenomenal. I mean,
beautiful cat portraits on Alessandro's side. Like, come on. Well, half cat portraits. Yeah.
I can never get this thing adorable. Right where I point in the camera to the thing I want to. Like, this is very hard.
It's because it's mirrored. And
it's mirrored, yeah. You. But yeah. It's like, I know which side of the room they're on, but I point my arm and nothing happens. I'm like, I'm so out of frame. It's ridiculous. Like,
but this is a case in point for why VR is a dangerous hobby. Because your eyes don't have awareness? Yeah, your eyes see one thing, your brain tells you one thing, and then you run into a wall. Mm.
You forget. Your little nook behind you just got better because
Look at this
wild Luna wild, just
I know wild Lupin
oh is that Lupin sorry
hello Lupin
good Lupin
those are my
shoulders. It's like how dare this plush get more attention than me. It's fucking hilarious. Bullshit.
Yeah, well, PSVR 2 is around the corner. You excited?
Yeah, it's like end of February, I think, like 20th of February or something around there. It's around there. Yeah, listen, I'm curious to see the hardware side of that thing because I think the hardware on that is like miles ahead of most consumer headsets at that price point, put it that way. And I love that Sony has done a lot of the good things of making like it much easier to use as opposed to the first PSVR. There's like no, it goes to your console, all of that good stuff. So yeah, keen to see how it is. I just think the launch lineup is it's a slightly lacking, I'll put it that way, especially if you've already played VR. I think if you haven't ever, there's so much there to experience for the first time, which is fantastic.
But, yeah.
Yeah. No, Tetris Effect VR, play that.
Oh my God.
It is a religious gaming experience, I'll tell you that much. It's fucking great. Fucking great.
I've just noticed there's a huge audio delay on your video versus your sound, but it doesn't matter because when I edit it,
I noticed that at the start and I was like, I don't know if this is my Discord being super slow or...
No, I'm seeing it a master, but don't worry, when I edit it, we'll sync you right up.
But won't yours be out of sync then?
No, because I'll line the audio to your mouth.
Because on my side, your audio syncs up fine with your...
No, because my... Well, it's funny because I've said this to you before. I don't know if I've ever said it while recording, but when I edit, I line our, so for those of you who don't know, we record the audio on Discord and we use a separate app called Audacity because Audacity's quality is crisper, you know, whatever, we can edit it, etc., etc.
Yeah, Discord compresses audio for transmission.
What I end up doing is I overlap the two and then I obviously get rid of the Discord sound. But weirdly, I sync up my audio once at the beginning. I can scrub through to the end and it's still perfect, like one for one. Mm-hmm. But yours, for some reason, there's like, I don't know, there's like a 5% delay, which means that I have to cut your clip up into like 5 or 8 different parts and then sync it up across the
That's
episode.
That's super annoying.
But I don't know why. Like, I can't tell you, hey, can
I
you
wonder,
please fix
because
this?
We,
like, I don't know
we
what
recorded the same
it.
Sample rate. Yeah, we recorded 48,000 kilohertz. So.
But it makes me think that it's not an Audacity thing. It might be a Discord thing because of the transmission. Yeah. There's like a slight.
It could be my video is delayed coming to you. So what your recording is compared to where you're speaking is different to where the audio actually is.
But it is funny that.
But it's weird that it would go out of sync like periodically during the video. Like, if anyone is an audio video specialist, let us know what's going on.
It's like your audio is playing at 99.99%, which is nothing. Yeah. But over an hour and a half,
it goes out of sync eventually.
It like gradually gets a few split seconds off.
That's super annoying though, because it's like you can't just whack the audio there.
I know, but
it took me
a while to figure out a quick fix. Now it's easy. I just. Every like 20 minutes, I cut your audio and move it up by like a split second or two. That's perfect.
It's quite rude, I won't lie.
I could really destroy your look, though. I could just put you completely out of sync. I have so much power. I could put emojis over your face.
This whole podcast is predicated on so much trust. You have no idea.
It really is. But it's funny because I have the final product. You'll never know. Mm-hmm.
If you want to start this, I could edit your audio so poorly. I've got the power of the EQ. I could make you sound so strange. Audio.
It's cool.
I'll make it just bad enough that it would be difficult for you to choose between the two. You know what I mean?
You should 100% just for 10 seconds at a random part of the show, so I'd never know, just like mess with my audio. Because come on, I'm not going to find that. Someone else can point it out.
Go to a few periods and just like highlight some audio and just like make the EQ make you sound like a chipmunk or something. You'd never know.
I love this
You'd
never game. Know.
Really We're just good. Exposing to everyone that we don't listen through the entire podcast before we publish. But
no.
Listen, I mean, here's the time.
Listen,
it's gonna bite us one day.
Pre-COVID, I used to listen to our episode on a Monday because I used to drive to work, and wasn't to like indulge myself. It was just to be like, how's the quality? What did we talk about?
How's the sounding?
Whatever. But yeah, Lenska just walked back through the door. What happened?
Wait, what? I thought she was going for a
swim.
The
crown stuff will be
there. Yes, Olympic.
What?
Olympic times.
Oh. No, she couldn't find her goggles. And
she couldn't find the swimming pool?
She couldn't find the swimming pool. Weird. She's been going for months now.
Yeah, I know. For so long. You would think she would know the way by now.
My goodness. No.
She couldn't find her caps and goggles. Maybe she left them at the pool one day. And
that's what she thinks happened. Mm. Yeah. Yikes. It happens.
And goggles are expensive. Caps, not so much.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's looking very despondent off camera right now.
She's very upset. I'm so sorry.
Did she bring you coffee at least?
I had a coffee this morning, actually, long before.
If you asked for a coffee now, you would get daggers.
I was actually up pretty early this morning. I went to bed at 11 last night, which, let me tell you, for Friday evening.
That's pretty early for you,
which is unheard of. I was exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Finished watching Everything Everywhere All at Once. Loved it. Would recommend.
Banger of a movie.
And then Lenska had passed out. And was like, I could play Switch or I could just sleep because we had no power. So I was like, I'm actually very tired. And I just passed out, which, of course, means I was then up at like 6:30. It's like, ding, woke up, went to the loo.
You've slept
like,
enough.
I'm wide awake now.
Did you go for a run?
No, not today. I ran yesterday before work.
I feel like if you're not running before 8:30, you're done. Like in this heat currently, like
I agree with you. But you know what's the nice trade-off is that when you get home, you can jump in the pool and it is the best.
That's
feeling.
True.
It is the
Please tell me you're not
best.
Doing lunchtime runs still.
No,
in this
not
scorching heat.
It's there was definitely a switch between December and January where our spring/summer towards the end of last year is like a joke. It was half-hearted summer. The sun's out, but the wind's a bit nippy. But now we haven't had rain
it
for
is
weeks.
Blazing now.
It is hot. Yeah, no.
And it's getting worse this weekend. I mean, we're recording on Saturday, but I know tomorrow, Sunday, is going to be like 34, 35.
What?
I just don't want to be here anymore.
So I've been doing pre-work runs, which is nice if I can drag myself out of bed.
Mm-hmm. That's always the biggest hurdle with running or working out in the morning is just getting yourself out of bed. Once you're in it, like you're good and you never regret it afterwards.
You never regret it.
Like I've never regretted it afterwards. To me, it's a much easier thing to do, like convincing yourself in those 5 minutes to get out of bed than going the whole day thinking about the workout you have at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And then you have 8 hours
rather,
in the day to talk
I'd rather
yourself
do it in the
it.
Morning as well.
Yeah.
No, 100%.
I can't. Evenings, I just can't. Unless I'm playing squash with like a bunch of friends where it's like more a social thing than a working out thing, then I'll do it, you know. But like to drag myself then, not a chance. No ways.
Yeah.
Speaking of, we need to play paddle. Like I play a lot of squash.
Paddle.
We need to play paddle. We've got good friend Frank who wants to play paddle with us, but he's been playing a lot. So
he's going
to destroy
us.
I feel like
us.
He's just going to get us there to, he could play like 2v1 and he would probably destroy us. Mm. Yeah.
I feel like if it's funny because I think paddle does have an actual MMR system, but I feel like Frank's MMR is way too high for us. If we were an official matchmaking. We need to play a couple bot games first before we get to playing people like Frank.
We're real Smurf accounts. We aren't even Smurfing. We're just bad.
We're just really bad.
Yeah, maybe we're just really bad.
Frank can start a new paddle Smurf account. You know,
he'll beat us 11 love or whatever the scoring system is and then ask us why we haven't played
Fire Emblem. I've played once and I can't remember the rules. It's not difficult to learn. I think that's why it's so popular, is that it's very easy to pick up, but there are some rules.
I know sort of some of the basic rules, but I don't know like how the scoring works. And I just like watching on YouTube like very popular professional rallies, and that shit looks wild.
Watching,
and I absolutely know that that's not how I will play.
No. Like, the average 99% of games being played are, you know, a couple hits back and forth and the point is
serve,
done.
Return, miss.
None of this diving and hitting it off the back of the wall and keeping it in play for like an hour. That doesn't happen.
It's the same with squash. Like when I play squash with my mates from work, like there's a couple of guys who are like really, really good. And when they play each other, you can see they kick into a different gear and they're just playing. Whereas when I play one of them, you know, for all intents and purposes, they're going a bit softer, but like our games are like, they serve, I hit it back, they rally because they just want to keep the rally going, and then I miss the ball.
And you're like sweating.
Yeah, I'm dying, and they're just like, oh my God, this is easy.
We've played 1 point.
Like, they're like, I could beat you on a serve if I really wanted to.
Like, oh my God. Like, please don't, have mercy.
They're super nice people though, so that they don't do that. That's why I feel really bad playing against them when I play like a cheeky shot. I'm like, yes, I'm trying. And they're like, oh, do you want to try
okay,
now?
Okay, cool.
You want to play? Let's go.
Yeah. Shit.
It's a good time. Squash is fun. I enjoy it.
It is. I haven't played in a real long time. But
if you ever want to join and you're at work, we sometimes play at the Bryanston Country Club. Depends on the day.
Nice.
But that's real close to you, so you could come do whack a ball at a wall.
I'm ready.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
I'm also ready to talk about video games. Ew. Check my chat to talk about video games. There's actually quite a bit coming out. It's quite funny that there are games this week that we didn't even know of last week that we are already playing, which is
amazing.
Pretty cool. Let's start off with that, actually. We'll hear about it more in the news, but Xbox had a developer showcase this week, which was kind of like their version of a direct, and I thought it was a pretty good show. I quite enjoyed the pace and briskness of it. But as part of that show, Tango Gameworks, the developers of The Evil Within, most recently Ghostwire Tokyo, and led by the famed director Shinji Mikami, you know, one of the core creators of the Resident Evil series, they showed off a new game called Hi-Fi. What is it? Hi-Fi Rush. And then they shadow dropped it. They're like, it is out now on Game Pass everywhere on PC. And it's like, that's cool.
Yep.
So Hi-Fi Rush is a very different game than you probably expect from Tango Gameworks, who have mostly dabbled in horror and survival horror or horror adjacent. You know, like The Evil Within was a homage to like Resident Evil, whereas Ghostwire Tokyo was more like an experiment in horror in an open world, which I didn't think really worked that well, but I don't think that's because the horror was bad. I just think the game was bad. Hi-Fi Rush is super not like any of that. It is super bright, colorful, cel-shaded. When I first saw it come on screen, I was like, oh my God, Tango Gameworks is doing a Sunset Overdrive sequel. Like, that was my immediate thought.
Yeah.
But it's not that. It is instead a blend between hack and slash and rhythm games. So, like, one of Matty's favorite games from last year was Metal Hellsinger, which was an FPS mixed with rhythm. You had BPM, which was kind of the same thing, also from last year. And this is kind of just another take on that idea, but from a hack and slash perspective. It is a linear game. I've seen a lot of people talk about saying it reminds them of Ratchet and Clank. And yep, I get that, because it's like platforming in an open world and then a combat encounter and then like witty dialogue and just like a good blend of like just fun color and low stakes to a lot of the action. But the action is where things are like really, really good. So everything in the world is like moving to a beat. So you can see things in the environments are like moving according to a beat. Your character Chai, like, you know, T. He moves his foot according to the beat. You have a little robot that flashes according to the beat. Your health bar. There's a lot of things on screen that remind you where the beat is. Let me just put it that way. And all of the combat and even some of your platforming goes according to that rhythm. So when you press an attack button, no matter if you missed the beat when you pressed the attack or whether you got it spot on, your attack will land on the beat. Mm. So for example, if you miss your initial timing on the attack, you know that the next one you need to press as soon as your attack lands because that's on the beat. And that's how you can kind of keep combos going. Okay. Your heavy attack works in the same way, but because of how long it takes, you have to wait a beat before you press again to kind of sync up with the beat. And it sounds like a lot to keep in mind when you're playing, but it becomes very natural very quickly. Just because of how well designed in terms of how it feels. Like, your attacks connect with a really good vibration, so it gives you a real good muscle memory indication of this is when I should press again and press again and press again. And then they start just layering things on top of that. So when you get to the end of a combo string, you will have this like short pause where you have these like two rings that come closer together and overlap. And when they overlap, if you press attack again, you'll do like a special higher damage form of an attack to finish that combo. And then you can obviously start mixing things up. Like, you can do two light attacks, two heavy, where you have to like think about the timing of that, because light attacks are a lot quicker. Heavy, you have to wait for the next one, go in again. But the more you stay on beat and the more you mix up your attack patterns, the more damage you're going to do and the higher score you're going to accrue. So each sort of combat encounter has a score at the end, similar to something in Bayonetta or Devil May Cry, where it's like, oh, you got an S rank or an A rank for time or a B rank for how well you kept on time with each of your attacks. So yeah, I've only played the first act and a bit. I played like a first big boss fight, which was quite fun. And I'm still kind of like getting into the swing of things with regards to like feeling comfortable with how to attack with the rhythm. But when you get it, like, it's an extremely satisfying combat system, which I think like really drives the game forward. Yeah. The platforming, I think, is fine. A lot of people seem to love the platforming. I find the jumping a bit weird. Yeah. Maybe I'm just not used to it, but I feel like it's a bit imprecise at times. But like, the actual platforming sections are fun enough because, again, they're to the beat. So there's some sections where you have to dodge like hazards, and it's much quicker if you keep your dodge timing towards the beat. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it feels good when you pull some of that stuff off. And then you can incorporate that into combat as well, where if you just want to keep your like score counter up, just by dodging attacks on the beat, you'll keep it going like up, up, up. So you don't always have to be attacking. You just have to be like aware of what's going on around you. So it's cool. It's got a really neat, like, breezy story so far, and the world is really interesting and colorful. And it's got phenomenal music. The boss fight I had yesterday had a track from Nine Inch Nails, which was just like perfect for that. Nice. So they've got a really good licensed soundtrack along with like some original music that is used to like kind of pepper the rhythm of the game. So it's a good time. I can see why a lot of people are really digging it, because I think it's the case of it coming out suddenly and surprisingly and then being good on top of it. You know what I mean? I think a lot of people, when they saw Tango Gameworks and saw this, they're like, ew, this is weird. I did
laugh because, in case you forgot or for context, Tango Gameworks, I don't know if you did mention it, but they did The Evil Within 1 and 2 and last year's Ghostwire Tokyo. And just reminder, Ghostwire Tokyo was a very middling / average game. Like, it reviewed fine. Wasn't a bad game, wasn't a particularly standout game. I did laugh though when Hi-Fi Rush was announced. It's like, from the makers of The Evil Within and The Evil Within 2. And then just no mention of Ghostwire Tokyo. I was like, ooh.
In some ways, it also makes sense because Ghostwire Tokyo is not even on Xbox yet.
I know, but it's just funny. I was like, you guys made the game too. Like, it's okay. You know,
you can admit it. It's
it'll
fine.
Further emphasize how different Hi-Fi Rush is from your standard, you know, like horror fare. But yeah, just so I haven't played it yet myself. But to your point, I remember playing Metal Hellsinger, which, like you mentioned, is a rhythm FPS. It's the same thing where initially playing the game, it is very weird to force yourself to try shoot based on the beat. But after like an hour or two, it feels natural and it's very satisfying. You know, you really get into it and you are all of a sudden like dodging and shooting in time with the beats, and it makes it like a very satisfying feel. So I can see that this game having, you know, that same effect, like you said. So I'd be very keen to try it out.
I do think fans of like hack and slash will really appreciate it, because any good hack and slash game is essentially a rhythm game.
Yeah.
Like a Devil May Cry and a Bayonetta is all about, okay, like Bayonetta is quite forgiving with when your button presses are, but you know, Devil May Cry, if you're playing it properly, is like this button now there when this lands. It is a rhythm game. It just doesn't have that underlying rhythm as sort of a mechanic. So
I'm gonna give a good idea to the Sekiro mod community quickly. Add a soundtrack to that game. You're welcome.
Shit,
can you imagine that? Yeah, I'd play that.
I'd fucking play that. Oh my god! Like all of your attacks are to a rhythm or to the sound. Oh my god!
Cool. Make it happen. Thank you in advance.
I think, like, I would love that idea, but that kind of also highlights why something like this needs to be designed from the ground up. Because, like, in the case of Hi-Fi Rush, not only do your attacks land on the beat, enemy attacks land on the beat, so you have a sort of predictability to if you are really in tune with where the beat is currently, you know exactly when an enemy attack is coming, and you kind of know where you can move around and do dodges and initiate your own attacks. But at the same time, you can't initiate your attack off the beat and expect yours to land first because yours lands at the same time. So it's a risk reward kind of conundrum that I think the more I play, the more I'll get more comfortable with it and more in tune. But it is more of a, I have to think about this more proactively rather than just button mashing. Yes. You know what I mean? The button mashing actually feels pretty bad, because like you attack and it almost feels like there's a delay on your attack landing, because it's obviously, if you've attacked right after the beat hit, you have to wait a whole beat for your attack to actually come down and hit an enemy. So it actively discourages you from trying to do that. Doesn't stop you entirely. Like, you can definitely play the game that way, but it feels weird if you do. So, it's good. I'm thoroughly enjoying it. I'm like always keen for smaller projects like this from big studios. And I'm glad that it's getting some success. It seems to be selling extremely well on Steam and just has a really good positive reception to it. Some great reviews already. So, good. Some people calling it like a game of the year standout for
and we're only in
Jan. For 2023 already. So
cool.
It's cool. There's a robot cat too.
I mean, when they had that in the trailer, I was like, well, say no more.
It was a robot cat.
The game can be anything. It doesn't matter.
Robot cat cleaning its butt while robots are looking at it, trying to figure out whether they should attack it. Yeah, it's great. I mean, 10 out of 10 right there. What more do you need in a game?
Nice. That is Hi-Fi
Rush. Play that.
On Game Pass.
It's on Game Pass. Easy.
Game Pass, cool.
Easy days. And if you don't have an Xbox, it's on PC, on Steam. Done.
Nice.
It's not on PS5, sorry.
That would be hilarious. Isn't it weird that, like you said earlier, Ghostwire Tokyo isn't on Xbox, but their brand new game is on Xbox before Ghostwire Tokyo has been put on Xbox.
If I'm not mistaken, Ghostwire Tokyo can only come to Xbox like in March or April.
Yeah, but
it's like
still
a year. It's weird. Listen, this to me means that Tango Gameworks kind of shifted the argument of like, when is Ghostwire Tokyo coming to Xbox? And here's a much better game that you can play in the meantime. like Ghostwire is coming, cool, whatever. It's going to be on Game Pass. But have you heard of Hi-Fi Rush? This shit's lit. Like, apparently there was a designer at Tango who pitched this game straight after The Evil Within 2. Like, this was his dream game to work on, and they've been, you know, I want to say working on it, but who knows the size of the team working on it for the past couple of years. Because went into Ghostwire then.
This isn't something that happened in the last 10 months.
Like, No. A lot of people are like, wow, they made this in a year after Ghostwire. It's like, no, that does not happen.
Come on, guys.
Like, especially a game of this quality, does not happen like that. So maybe, you know, it didn't have the full, maybe it was like 10% of the studio working on this, but it's cool to see that they're able to do these little side projects while working on something bigger, because it probably means they're working on their next big thing outside of Ghostwire. Evil Within 3, let's go.
Oh my gosh, I still have not played any Evil Thins.
You would like... I have not played Evil Within 2 to completion, but what I did play of it is real good. Time. Like, you would really like it.
Nice.
It's a much better game than Ghostwire.
You know, it's
controversial, I know. I hope Darren's not listening. I seem to hate all the games he plays nowadays.
Poor Darren.
Like, he enjoyed Ghostwire, he enjoyed Forspoken, and I'm just like... These are not good games. I'm very sorry to tell you.
Well, speaking of Forspoken, okay. Well, we haven't played this game.
Speaking of Forspoken.
We have not played this game.
Or speaking of Forspoken.
Oh my God. Are you mean? speaking of Forspoken, I mean, we haven't played it to completion, but I know you've played only about an hour of it.
So brief, yeah. Like brief.
And I've played, I'd say about 2 hours-ish.
So again, according to Darren, we are still 3 hours away from the game actually getting good.
So look, I can get that because from the get-go, just to be upfront, like Forspoken has come out, it reviewed also like very middling, average reviews.
Very
poorly, sitting on like
actually.
An upper 60s on Metacritic, somewhere
that's,
there.
That's... Like, people want to say, oh, that's a 7. That's poor for Square Enix game. I'm sorry.
No, it is.
With,
but like,
with the way they've been going. Mm.
But that's just to set the tone because, you know, people have been like, you know, either hating on this game or being like, yeah, it's actually really good. The first 2 hours is not really enough to say like, hey, this is a good or bad game. But I can say that it is a real slow start.
Jeez. Yeah.
There's a lot of dialogue, and dialogue's not a bad thing, but it's like, it's a lot of dialogue, a lot of forced walking. A lot of dialogue, a lot of more forced walking. And it's just it's taking a while to get going. So I've only just kind of reached the open world. And I've probably spent like 15 minutes in the open world. So I can't, I can't really say like, yeah, but look, it's got some good ideas and I'm not hating it. I'm very keen to see how things open up. And to see how the story unfolds. Like, I will say that a lot of people have been giving this game shit for dialogue. And I think it's more a thing of it's either going to land or it's going to miss. Like, I know, and I can tell you off the top of my head, people I know who would just hate this game outright because this isn't their style of game, purely from a tone point of view. But if you're okay with, you know, a sort of dialogue or story that jostles the line between, you know, it's super serious and, you know, it's a bit tongue-in-cheek at times in. Yeah, you'll probably enjoy this because it is. It bounces from I'm this character and I'm living this very hard knock life, you know, been living kind of on the street, hustling to get things by, but also I've got a really good sense of humor about it. So yeah, but I don't know what your thoughts are. You've only played the first hour, so you've been further behind.
I've barely scratched the surface of this game. I've just been quite busy this week with other stuff, so. Yeah, I can't really give a definitive like recommendation one way or the other because I haven't even really got to the gameplay yet.
You've been doing literally just walking simulation.
Yeah, walking in that brief like parkour running scene where I'm running away from like some other like gang members. And I'll say that like the dialogue, you know, I haven't seen enough of it and I haven't really like started the story. But the dialogue's weird to me. It's not the writing, it's the delivery, which is strange to me.
I don't know.
It just feels like Frey's fine, but the rest is all around is really weird. That little scene where she's interacting with that gang in the alley and the way they were just barking things at her when she was getting away was so like, no one would talk like this.
No.
Like, it's just so bizarre.
But
like,
yeah,
and maybe that's overanalyzing the game in a way, which is unfair because so many other games have so much unnatural dialogue. But I just think it's because like such a spotlight has been put on this game's dialogue that you are more acutely aware of things that just stand out as strange. So yeah, I don't know. I think Frey's pretty cool. She's voiced by the same actress who was in Resident Evil, if I'm not mistaken, the Netflix show.
Yeah.
And I quite like her.
Yeah.
So But I don't know. I want to play it because it, apparently it's brief. Like if you just
mainline it,
it's like 15 hours.
I think it's like even shorter than that, if I'm not mistaken.
Like I can get behind that. That's pretty cool. I could probably find some enjoyment in some parkour and like combat nonsense when it's just 15 hours and not 50.
Exactly.
You know, if this game was 50, I might have already put it down.
I'm there with you. I'm quite keen. Look, I think if you want to play this game and get hours, you know, like 20, 30 hours.
You definitely can.
It's there. Like it's an open world game. But I think just to go back to what you said, I think people came into this game with very high expectations, but for a number of reasons. And that when this game was shown off, it was like, this is the next gen. Like, hey, this is Project Athia.
Mm.
Look at this next gen game. Ooh, like it's going to be fantastic. And then the years that followed was just many trailers saying like the story is great. This character is so important and really good. And it kind of sets the bar. So when you get to the game, it's not that you're, but like, okay, this is one of those games where I feel they showed it way too much before it launched. Like, if you had initial, I mean, development's a weird cycle where, you know, things, they had to delay it or whatever, but if they showed like an announcement trailer, then maybe one or two gameplay showcases and left it at that, I think we might have been in a different state. Not to say that, you know, that fixes what is arguably a good or bad game, but I think it would set the expectations and people would maybe be not as hard on it as they have been. Because I do think it is a bit unfair to take a clip of dialogue out of context, like, oh my God, this is like the worst game ever. I'm like, looking at it like, from one side and one...
Like those clips were bad, but exactly, like you said, context is everything. I also think like this game was marketed as, you know, it was one of the games that was revealed when the PS5 was, you know, getting its marketing. That's when it was called Project Athia.
Yes.
And it was like, oh, look at this visual showcase of what the PS5 can do, whatever. It's only on PS5 and PC. And, you know, it is true next gen. And
well,
from what I can tell, there are aspects of it that are very much live up to that. But there are aspects which look like the lighting in that New York stage. Yeah,
I want to just draw your attention. If you're watching the video feed right now, this does not look like a next-gen game. Like that's where I will 100% agree with the criticism. Like looking around here, look at the sky.
Yeah,
it feels it's weird. Very like a PS2, PS3 even. It doesn't look right. It's like those clouds, I'm like, that's doesn't look good. Like
there's clips of the game that are phenomenal. They're beautiful. Like I think the combat really looks good, but I think as an overall package, it's nowhere near as cohesive. I would argue that something like Horizon Forbidden West does a much better job of showcasing the open world.
Yeah.
And that is a cross-gen game.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't look like that all the time on PS4, but when you're playing it on PS5, there is nothing held back. Like I still see threads on Twitter today of people doing like, you know, macro photography in that game on like rocks and the detail is just insane.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can watch Digital Foundry's whole like 30-minute breakdown on this, and it is quite interesting because John Linneman there makes a very good case for why some things look strange. And again, it comes down to lighting. He even compares it to Assassin's Creed Unity and like, look how much better this is because the lighting is done in a much better way. And that's everything because your eyes look at things and go, that just doesn't look right. You know what I mean? So yeah, I don't know. I'm playing on the ray tracing mode and on the 120 FPS mode, because apparently that means you can play with ray tracing at 40 FPS, which is like to me the sweet spot, and it feels pretty good.
Okay.
I think it runs pretty well so far, but I'm not really in the open world yet, so I can't say how well that holds up.
The footage you're seeing now, I mean, just let's, I suppose, be upfront about that. Like, I'm playing on the performance mode, so it is visually scaled back to run at a better frame rate.
But I mean, no game that we've played, well, that I've played at least in this gen, has a drastically different looking game. When looking at performance and quality, like there are differences for sure. But like when you play God of War in performance and God of War in quality, like I'm not looking at the one and going, this looks like it's from a different gen of console.
Yeah.
Like, that's not how it looks. So I don't think playing it on quality here with your footage would drastically change the presentation. It just looks, it looks strange. You're right. The sky, I haven't got to this point in the game, so I haven't seen this, but it looks odd. It doesn't look bad. It just looks weird. I just think it looks out of place.
But we'll see.
Frey's hair. Is it Frey?
It's Frey, yeah.
Frey's hair looks real good though. it's got a good flow to it. It is. I do enjoy that.
Yeah.
But that's Forspoken. I'm going to play more of this for sure. I kind of do want to see more of it. Whether I see it through is a different story, but I kind of want to get to some of the parts that people say are good so I can see if I'm clicking with them. Just very briefly, I can't talk about this because reviews are out. Yeah. I guess part of the reason why I wanted to play Forspoken yesterday was because we got a... DualSense Edge.
Nice.
Courtesy of PlayStation South Africa.
Super shiny.
So if you're not entirely sure what this is a new controller from Sony that is like their answer to the Xbox Elite, finally. And it is just as expensive. It is 4,500 Rand or so.
which is ludicrous.
It's a lot of money. Like, this is not a controller you impulse buy because you need a new controller. This is a controller that you go, do I really need all the features that this thing offers? Because it is literally four times almost more expensive than a regular controller.
Yeah.
But I will say, though, that the limited time I've spent with it, I'll obviously chat about this more next week, I think. It's a nice premium feeling controller. So it's got the, on the back, it's got single paddles, which you can change. So I've got the like traditional paddle structure there, but you can change it to a much shorter hair trigger, and it like places it further down the controller like arm. You've got these switches here next to the triggers, independent switches, which when you flick them down, change where the trigger stops.
Okay.
So that's a very short stop, whereas all the way up is a full stop.
Okay.
That's really cool. You've got these two buttons on the front here, which are like function buttons. These are the ones I'm not entirely sure what they do, because like whenever I hold them, they bring up a menu that allows me to swap between controller presets because it's got onboard memory. So you can save different profiles to the controller and then flick on through them on the fly.
Yeah.
But I don't understand why there's two to do the same thing. Maybe I can map them to do different things or whatever.
Would it not just be two different profiles?
No, so right now clicking them does nothing. You basically have to hold them down, and that brings up like a contextual menu that you can then press a face button that switches between something. Like I can hold this button down and press up and down on the D-pad, and that will increase or decrease my headphone volume, for example. It's like nice, but I don't understand why there's two of them.
Yeah.
Yet, you know what I mean? visually, it's got, you know, the face buttons and the D-pad are black. The touchpad is black if you want to compare to
an old controller. Sorry, audio viewers, you're getting a raw deal here.
Yeah. It's, you know, you can tell it's quite different. I really don't like that the black parts are now glossy as opposed to matte. I think that is silly for something that is constantly in your hands. Glossy things just suck. They pick up fingerprints like nothing else. So that's a poor decision in my view. I've got the concave sticks on. There's two different heights on them. So this is a normal height. You then get the longer ones that are like, I don't know, apparently some FPS players like longer thumbsticks. I think they feel weird. I'm not a fan of them. But they're fairly easy to take off and replace. Like you just pop them off and they click back on. And then obviously the whole big draw of this controller is that if your sticks do develop drift, like all controllers will because of the components they use, you can actually buy a like module that you can like remove this and replace it. That is sold separately, but it means your console, your controller has some longevity, I guess. What else? Yeah, I don't. You know, I'm still playing around with it. It comes in this ridiculous case.
of course,
that is. It's like, I don't know, can you hear that? It's plastic. It's like almost the same plastic as the PS5 console, which is, this case is heavy and it feels like a weapon. Like it feels violent. I'm just realizing now there's a flap on the back so you can charge your controller while it's in the case, which is actually quite cool.
That is hilarious. I love that they've catered like every possible scenario here.
Literally, you know, every
we've got a percentage of our audience that will buy this that are going to 100% travel this and need to be able to plug it into a power
100%.
Bank.
I mean, It's got space for all of your little components there, nice. Stuff like that. So, you know, it's got a nice braided cable that comes with it. So it's the sort of thing that if you've owned a Xbox Elite controller, you're like, yes, this is what these are. And yeah, Sony did one of those and it's very nice. I think it's got a much nicer weight. I was telling you before the show that the arms on the new one, so the old DualSense has this like very weird sharp edge here, which when I first got the PlayStation, I found that thing annoying because it like was like almost sharp on my pinky. That's where my pinky rests. This Elite has a much more rounded off
finished
like arm, so nice. That doesn't happen, which to me, if it wasn't $4,500, I would buy the controller just for that because it makes a big difference to the ergonomics for me and my hand size. Yeah. But yeah, there's a lot of software to go through. Like as soon as you link this thing up to the PS5, it's like, oh, you got a DualSense Edge. Let's take you through all the things you can do. And you can do all the things like adjusting the dead zones or the activation zones of the thumbsticks, adjusting the activation zones of the triggers. So you can say that halfway through the trigger press, it should initiate, not on a full press. You can completely remap all the buttons. So you can make triangle X if you really wanted to. And then you can map whatever you want to the paddle buttons. And then you can save four profiles to the controller itself so that you can flick between them on the fly. And you can even have a per game profile, so it will load the profile when the game loads, which is pretty neat, I think. Nice. So yeah, I think, you know, this is squarely focused on people who are taking their gaming very seriously, competitive shooters, fighting games, you know, unless using a fight stick, or someone who just, you know, they play their PlayStation a lot and they want the extra, you know, they want the paddles for Apex or for what other competitive shooters are there now? It's Call of Duty. you know, stuff like that. So I don't think it's for everyone, but I'm pretty sure the price is going to dictate that it's not for everyone, because I don't think everyone is going to spend $4,000 on a controller.
It's a premium low. Like you said, it's either for competitive gamers or people who just want that extra bit of flair because they spend a lot of time with their PlayStation. So
If you have a lot of disposable income and you play a lot of PlayStation, this could be for you.
If you have money to
I do like the heft of these things. Like the Elite in this one feels so much more heavy in your hand, and that gives them already just a premium feeling because they feel solid, you know what I mean? They don't feel like the DualSense is quite heavy, but it means they don't feel like a toy, for the lack of a better word. The DualSense doesn't feel like a toy. It's $1,500 controller. It is definitely not a toy. but yeah, it definitely feels, even just putting the original one in my hand, I'm like, oh yeah, that Elite, that Edge feels a lot better to me. Yeah. So.
Look, I completely get the market this is tailoring towards, but I do still think it is a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And I think Sony knows that.
Yeah,
100%. This is not a controller they sell to everyone who has a PS5. Mm. That's just not feasible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's cool. I guess I'm going to play more around with it. I'm going to play a lot of Forspoken with it and probably a lot more on PlayStation with
it. You should replay 2020's Game of the Year, Astro's Playroom.
I didn't hear any of that because I feel like Discord just died.
I was going to say you should play 2020's Game of the Year, Astro's Playroom.
That's actually not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea because even playing Forspoken, I was like, oh, the vibration feels good on this thing. Like, so maybe they've tweaked some things here and there. I should give that a go. That's a good idea. Yeah.
This is why I'm big bucks.
That game's also just fucking great. So
it is. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah.
Cool. We'll hear more.
What else is on your docket?
In future. So let me just timestamp here, because you know this is production. This is production life. If you
live wanna production.
If you want to produce for us and charge us nothing, hit me up. I'm kidding. So you briefly spoke about this last week. Good old Crisis Core, the remake/remaster that came out towards the end of last year. We Steam shared and I inhaled this game over the last week. Not for any other reason than it actually is kind of short. If you mainline it, it took me about 10 and a half hours to reach credits.
Probably a lot shorter than you remember it being.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, but this game is not without its, you know, portable restrictions and slight issues, but I still deeply love this game. And I think it is a must play for anyone who has any sort of love for Final Fantasy VII, whether that be the original or the remake or both. Like, if you've never played Crisis Core, it just gives you so much more context to, you know, what follows in Final Fantasy VII, why Cloud is the way he is and why he has certain characteristics and traits, et cetera, et cetera. But even, so if you don't know, Crisis Core is based, you know, it's a prequel to Final Fantasy VII that follows a character named Zack, who is in Soldier trying to do his best to become a hero. Like, that's really just the story in a nutshell, which in itself sees you interacting with certain characters like good old Sephiroth. This is before he goes off the edge. And new characters like Angeal and Genesis, who is the antagonist, who will not shut up about Lovelace and will not stop speaking poetry and nonsense. But the game, like I mentioned last week, it's funny how Final Fantasy VII, the original, was a turn-based game. And Crisis Core came along a few years later and it flipped that on its head. It said, you know what, we're going to keep the same sort of magic and feel of combat, but it's all active battle now. You can dodge, you can attack, you know, chain together attacks. And
far more of an action game.
It's far more of an action game. And that, to me, feels like Final Fantasy Remake looked at this game as one, thought, how can we sort of blend the two? And that's what we got with Final Fantasy VII Remake. It's really fun. Like, I enjoy playing this game. The combat's great. But like I said earlier, it does definitely have things about it that make you realize, like, yeah, this was on a handheld many years ago. Like, the story is very much a thing of, there's a bit of dialogue and then there's action. Like, all the time. It's like, here's a line of dialogue. Oh, no, bad guys. Okay, we're going to fight now. Okay, dialogue. Oh, no, bad guys. We're going to fight now. Which, I don't know if that's necessarily just bad design, but I think it is. It kind of was designed, obviously, for the PSP, which had its limitations. And you want to try to fit a nice, long RPG onto a small system with a very small space on it, you know, on those UMDs. And, I mean, I think you touched on this last week as well. Those missions are very much short, also made to feel portable and played on the go. Like, there's a lot of side missions.
Especially the side missions.
They take a handful of minutes to get through, and there are tons of them. So, like, for better or worse, if you're going to play this game, just be aware that it is a portable game that has just been modernized. But I am grateful that it is now available to a wider audience, because it was only available on PSP forever, but now it's available on just about all the modern platforms. And like I said, I think it is a must play for anyone who's even remotely interested in Final Fantasy VII, because it's a fun story.
Zach's, I love
a
great our anime character.
It is. It's like, it's, I was saying so to you good. Before we recorded, it's weird how it straddles this line between it's super serious at moments and then super ridiculous in others. Like, it's the only way I can explain it is it's just very anime, and that's not a bad thing. Like, I say that because I find it very endearing how you can bounce between the two so seamlessly.
I think you mentioned this last week, but like, now that you've played it, how interesting is it that this combat, you know, as limited as it is, given the time that it came out, but you can definitely see where Remake looked at this and was like, oh, okay, we need to do something similar. Like, because it is... Remake is so much closer to this combat than it is to like any sort of Final Fantasy VII. It's so good.
Yeah. What's interesting is that I wasn't aware that they'd made combat changes to this. So that's why I think this game, it's like, is it a remaster? Is it a remake? And it's like,
they did make some substantial changes. Yeah.
So like, one example that comes to mind, you get your support material, which is essentially, you know, it's not magic, it's you doing a special attack. Like, there's one called the Salt Twister. And I don't think this was an original game, but you can buff those using that support material if you do a couple attacks before you use it. It makes them stronger.
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, about halfway through the game, when you get the Buster Sword, you get access to kind of like a heavy attack mode, which is very similar to Final Fantasy VII Remake, when Cloud can switch to that other stance. Remember, to do like, he moves slower, but he can do stronger attacks. This has that, but it, you know, in a slightly different way. But it's like, they've changed things here, and it feels, you know, more modern in that sense, which is very cool. It's not you playing the game and like, okay, this combat is what it is. They are adding things as you go, which I really appreciated.
I mean, I guess they were kind of aware that like a lot of people would have played Remake here. So like things that made sense there that would make natural sense to add or tweak here, just it's a win-win, you know what I mean? So yeah, it's a good, I mean, it's a much more straightforward game than Remake, and you know, you have a very limited subset of things you can do with regards to like materia selection and equipment. So it is much more focused on just like action, but there's still like depth to a lot of the combat, I think was there in the PSP game, but it's made I'm more aware of it now, you know, probably being a much more mature gamer. That sounds weird.
It's funny how I remember things through like tinted goggles, where like a good example is I remember this game being much longer, but I guess back then I did do a lot more side quests. What was funny for me is that I went and I looked at howlongtobeat.com. I was like, okay, cool, how long does it take to beat the original? And the average time is like 18 hours. I was like, oh okay, that's quite long. Then I looked up this game, it's like average time to beat like 11 hours, 12 hours. I was like, I wonder, I don't remember there being a sprint button in the original. I could be wrong, but here you have an actual sprint button and the load times are obviously a lot quicker.
I can't remember at all. Like, so it's like, been so long.
I'm like, damn, it shaved off that much playtime off it. It's just interesting. But yeah, it's a good time. If you know, play it not expecting this fully fledged open world RPG. It's very linear. You're riding through quote unquote like tunnels or linear paths, if I can say that, with encounters throughout. Side quests, you're not running to a side quest, you literally load into an arena for all intents and purposes, and you have to kill the monster at the end of it to complete the side quest. Like, it's very basic. This game would be premium on the Switch Deck, the Steam Deck.
The Switch Deck. I love the Switch Deck.
Make it happen.
But I think with Final Fantasy VII, is it Rebirth? What's the part two?
I think it's Rebirth. Reunion.
It was Rebirth. Reunion?
Something. Yeah. No, this is with, Reunion. I don't know.
Yeah, this is Reunion. Yeah, Rebirth. Something with an R. With it coming out end of the year, start of next year, who knows, winter. I think this is a really clever strategy from Square to like bring this game out now, because if you've played Remake, you'll know that things aren't following the same sort of path as the original game. And that does mean could potentially mean some interesting things for Zach and his implications in the story. So having this game that doesn't necessarily do the same thing with its narrative, it's still very much the same story as the PSP game.
Yeah.
It gives you an introduction to Zach and who the hell he is. And I think that's really important for Final Fantasy VII, the Remake series going forward.
He's a good character.
And like you said, it's just good that it's off. Like, you can play it without needing a PSP, because it's insane that it was there, stuck on there for the good parts of the past, like 15 years. It's crazy. Yeah. So,
when you feel old, it's a good time. Remember playing this game as a teenager?
Oh, absolutely. I know exactly where I was when I finished playing. I was like in a car on the way to Durban for some holiday in like grade 9 or 10, and playing the end of this game.
You finished this game.
And like holding back tears, like in the car.
You were that meme of Will from Stranger Things, like looking out the window,
100% just looking out the window. Like,
why does it hurt so bad?
100%. It hit me out of nowhere. I did not expect it to. And I was like, what the fuck? This game, what is it? What's happening?
The thing is, I knew that. I mean, if you played Final Fantasy VII, you would know that's going to happen, but it still hits. You're like, man.
It hits hard, man.
Well,
also, it just made me like Cloud a lot less. He is literally just Zach.
Oh, yeah. Well, on that, it is cool that Zach's voice actor feels off to me, just because I'm so used to the original on the PSP. But what is nice on the flip side is that when you meet Cloud and Tifa and Aerith, it is all the voice actors and actresses from Final Fantasy VII Remake, which is very cool.
Which is cool.
I do like that. Yeah, play this game. If you're itching for more Final Fantasy VII following Remake, and you know, you don't feel like paying the original. I think this is a nice middle ground to, like you said, give you some context to Zach, who you probably saw in Remake, like, who the hell is this? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, I mean,
a
lot of people played Remake for the first time without context. Going like, on? Yeah. Why is this guy, why does he keep popping up in flashbacks with errors?
Yeah, and it's like, going to blow their mind when things happen at the end of this game, like, but it doesn't happen at the end of Remake.
Yeah, I'm so curious to see where they're taking that. Yeah. Because the end of Remake suggested some things, so leave it at that.
Play this game. Cool.
That's a nice bunch of video games we've been playing. Should we bounce to video game releases. Release dates?
Correct.
We're looking at games coming out from June 27th all the way up until, can you believe, February 3rd.
Have a thunk.
January 27th. Okay. Still quite a bit coming out in January.
So they've changed the VG 24/7. They've now highlighted like a whole lot of
releases.
Stuff. Yeah, big releases.
Yeah. Huh. So firstly, coming on January 31st. Actually, all of these are coming January 31st. SpongeBob SquarePants, The Cosmic Shake.
Nice.
Cosmic Milkshake. Mm-hmm. Cool. We Were Here Forever, coming to PS4, PS5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series S and X. January 31st. Inkulinati, early access on PC and Xbox. Season, A Letter to the Future. I've seen some reviews for this that are pretty, seems pretty good. Coming to PC, PS4, PS5.
Mm-hmm.
Superfuse, coming Steam Early Access on PC. And Undisputed, also Steam Early Access on PC. Then, swinging into February. Got Rhythm Sprout, Sick Beats, and Bad Sweets. That's a great name. I love that. Consoles and Switch, February 1st. Deliver Us Mars, coming to PC and consoles, February 2nd. Perish, coming to PC, February 2nd. We get the console release of Fashion Police Squad, which came out on PC last year. It's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. Active DBG, Braves Rage.
Nice.
Not sure what that is. PC, PS5, and Switch, February 2nd. Tails, The Backbone Preludes. I highly doubt this is a prequel for Sonic. But
never know.
Coming to PC, February 2nd. That's it. Yeah, that's it. That is it. And then the next week is
Hogwarts,
lots of stuff.
Legacy.
Hogwarts Legacy, Wanted Dead, Returnal on PC. Ooh.
Mm.
Theater Rhythm, Final Bar Line, PS4 and Switch, coming in February. Get your Final Fantasy Theater Rhythm going.
Those games are great. Played them on the DS. Theater Rhythm.
I remember you saying they're very, very good.
Really fun.
So I saw, I don't think we have it on news, but I guess we could quickly mention it now. They had a bunch of voice actors announced for Like a Dragon Ishin, so the new Yakuza game.
Because that's also in February.
So Kenny Omega's in there, and Rahul Kohli is going to be in there. So that's pretty sick, because he's a huge fan of the game or the series, as far as I know.
That's very cool.
It's a pretty cool casting there. So, yeah, just wanted to mention
one day we'll play a Yakuza game. One day.
I think it would be cool to play one at release when everyone's talking about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm.
But they are long-ass games.
They are long. So long.
Yeah.
But ciao. What news would you like to kick us off with?
Should we talk about this Naughty Dog stuff? Because I think they kind of bleed into one another. Like, so the show being renewed, and then just Naughty Dog's Neil Druckmann saying, yeah, let's start with that. Because then we'll they relate to one another. So The Last of Us has got a great show now on HBO. It's really good. And Craig Mazin and Neil Druckmann, the two creators of the show, basically said pretty plainly in the past that they don't intend to adapt anything that's not part of the games, which is a lot of people wondering, will we just get to season two and it like, boom, then we have to wait for a new game.
Yeah.
So in an interview with BuzzFeed, Neil Druckmann gave a sort of update on where the studio is with regards to returning to its current properties. He said he didn't really mince words, and he said that Naughty Dog is done with Uncharted. Like, they have moved on. It seems unlikely that they are going to be making another Uncharted game. He says, for us, Uncharted was insanely successful. Uncharted 4 was one of our best-selling games. And we were able to put our final brushstroke on that story and say that we're done. We're moving on. That's as definitive as you're going to get. That does not mean we will not get another Uncharted. There's been rumors forever now that Sony Santa Monica is going to be taking the reins of Uncharted and producing a new one. Because of course they will. Sony's not going to just be like, cool, we're done with that highly successful, highly lucrative
IP. We need money.
It's like, not a chance.
Yeah.
But with regards to The Last of Us, it's a bit of a trickier story. He says, it's up to us whether we want to continue The Last of Us or not. Our process is the same thing we did when we did part two, which is if we can come up with a compelling story that has this universal message and statement about love, just like the first and the second game did, then we will tell that story. If we can't come up with something, we will have a very strong ending with part two, and that will be the end. So that, to me, that suggests to me that they haven't. There's been reports, it's been written about before, and she tweeted it this week as well, that Hayley Gross, the co-writer of The Last of Us Part 2, submitted an outline for a Part 3, but that's as far as it got for now.
Yeah.
So this tells me there is zero active development on a Part 3 currently, because I assume Naughty Dog is working on, you know, the Factions multiplayer game, which they say is like really, really big.
Yeah.
And Neil Druckmann already said he's working on a new IP. I don't think they have the capacity to be working on three games at this time. So if The Last of Us Part 3 is a thing, it's not for a while.
Yeah. For many years. Yeah.
That makes the TV show quite an interesting prospect, because like if they are going to, so we can move on, I guess. The Last of Us Part 2 is getting a second season. It's been renewed by HBO. Shocker. Mm-hmm.
Surprise.
The first season does encompass the first game fully and also includes Left Behind, the DLC for the first game. So that is very much, this is the first game told, done and dusted. Yeah. And they've already said in this renewal that the second season will focus on the second game. Now, like you've said many times, you don't think they will fit all of the second game into one season.
Not a chance.
I think they could. I don't think they will.
No.
Because of this whole Last of Us 3 stuff. Like, there is no reason HBO goes, we're going to make a second season of the show and then just put it on ice until eventually there's a third game or never. You know what I mean? They're going to be like, well, we'll do two seasons of the second game. And that, you know, gives us 4 years of time to figure out if there is going to be a third game, or maybe then the opinions of Druckmann and Muzzin change and they do some other stories within this universe. But that makes the most sense to me now.
Well, if anything, so I would be baffled and floored if they could fit the entire second game into one full season. Okay. If anything, I could see
them. It's a much larger game than the first one.
It's way bigger. I could see them maybe doing it over two seasons, like, and doing it justice. But I do wonder with this multiplayer game how that will bleed into, you know, even that season. If this multiplayer game is obviously a whole separate story, but we don't know how far away it is from Joel and Ellie. Like, is it the same? Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but is it the same town? Is it a completely different part of the US? Is it a different continent? Like, we don't know. Maybe some of the multiplayer stuff will bleed into the show. Like, we don't know. But I do think if they do an extra two seasons of The Last of Us, that puts us in our 2025, 2026. Maybe by then they'll have reconsidered making the third game, or they will have it in production. But even if they don't do the TV show, like, maybe they will just end it at season two, and that's that, and that's cool. Like, you don't need to now, hey, Naughty Dog, you need to make a third game so the show can carry on. Like, I don't think
I do think, regardless of whether they split it into two seasons or not, you know, the second game, like, that's still not enough time for the third game to get going. Sure. Like, they would need the third game to be done for them to even start on a season for that. So either way, I think the series is kind of going to end with the second game, and for a long time, unless they change their minds on what they're going to include.
Exactly.
We'll see. I just hope HBO doesn't do what they did to, like, Westworld, where there was a very definitive, like, this is the story we want to take. And to a degree, like, the story was then written out for more season or whatever, but it just got so ludicrous. Like, Yeah, I just hope they don't do that, because then that sours The Last of Us as a property.
Yes.
You know, as a whole for a bunch of people. So, you know, or they do the Game of Thrones things where they're like, well, we don't have content to carry on writing. We're just going to do our own.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think Druckmann would stick around for that. But if HBO has the license to continue doing that and it's making them money, I can see people doing that. So
yeah.
Hope it doesn't come to that, but we'll see.
No, we will see. Yeah.
Sure is good. Really, really enjoying it. I do wonder what they do with the second game. Like the second game structure is so different. It is very much a you play up to a point and then there is a hard cut and you go all the way back.
But
and then play up. Like, how does that convey onto the series?
How funny would it be though if season two is that first half of the game and season three is
that's what I was thinking as well.
Because that's
be interesting.
The game is told like that for a very specific reason, to make you feel one thing and then flip it on its head and go like, but also here's this other perspective. I could
like
see the show
if season two, if it's split in two, like if it ends with that confrontation in like the theater,
yeah,
and that's how it like ends.
Yeah.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, it would be quite impactful, I think. So
I also think so. I think it would translate pretty well into a TV format like that. I mean, the first game has, which I suppose gives credit to Naughty Dog in how they tell stories. Like a lot of people argue, you know, it's more story than game. And I can get that because the games are very story focused. It's not a bad thing.
There's a real filmic flair to how the game is shot and framed. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's why it makes sense that the second episode was directed by Neil Druckmann. It's like, yeah, of course. He's kind of knows what he's doing with regards to like how to shoot things and how to frame things for tension. So,
I did laugh. There was a tweet going around this week where it's a shot of Neil Druckmann and one of the clickers. It's the caption is like, Neil Druckmann telling the clicker where to spawn. It's like, that's great.
I love that they brought back the original voice actors for the clickers because they sound phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, it is sound funny so though, authentic. Like,
imagine being at a dinner party. Like, what do you do? Like, I'm a voice actor. What's your best role? Like, I'm the clicker.
I'm the clicker. Like, you've seen Last of Us?
Wow.
I'm that fucking thing with its head split open. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Everyone at the restaurant just leaves. They're like,
oh my God.
What the fuck is going on? Yeah.
Cool. And other news this week. So, Xbox had a little sneaky we knew about it a couple of weeks ago. And Xbox,
I was about to say, this wasn't a surprise.
Developer Direct. What was a surprise, though, is like we touched on earlier, Hi-Fi Rush. So I'll just get that out the way quickly. Hi-Fi Rush was announced and simultaneously released the very same day. Very cool little unexpected shadow drop, because when the showcase was announced, we knew we were going to get a close look at four games, including Minecraft Legends, Forza Motorsport, The Elder Scrolls Online, and what is the fourth one? I'm blanking here. Oh, Redfall. So we got a release date for Redfall. And we got a release
10
date
minutes
for,
of gameplay for Redfall. I'm still excited for this game. Let me be pretty upfront with that. I think it's going to be fun, and I've yet to be disappointed by an Arkane Austin gig. I think they really still struggle to show this game off in trailers. Like, it just does not trailer well.
That's the thing. We were talking about it at work, and one of my colleagues said it just looked slow. And I was like, it looks slow because, you know, it happens with a lot of games. No one plays the game like that. But when you want to show how a game is, you know, your character's going to walk slow and like look around at the environment and pull out a gun and shoot. I think when you're playing the game, it's going to be way more fast-paced. And you're going to be, I mean, you can play it solo because, you know, they've said it
co-op,
is, you can play it solo, but I think playing this co-op would be a lot of fun.
I think the co-op is going to be the big thing. I did get the sense more from this trailer than in the past, because I think a lot of people in the past have thought this is more of a Left 4 Dead gig. And from this trailer, I could definitely see how this is more like a Far Cry. Like, this is a, you've got points around the map that have enemies and those give you certain, you know, pieces of equipment, whatever. And then you've got your story beats, which take you to more scripted scenes and whatever. But I guess the introduction of characters who are more like hero shooter archetypes with different abilities is more in line with like your Left 4 Dead. So, but it does definitely seem it's got the DNA of an Arkane game, you know, immersive sim. They were very, adamant that you could approach all of these scenarios in different ways, depending on your chosen character and your weaponry at the time. Like, for instance, there was definitely stealth there, which is like awesome. I can't imagine an arcane game without some elements of stealth. But yeah, the gameplay just does not. I can see the potential there. I just don't think it comes through in what they're showing. And that's a real bummer. I just really hope that this is not a case of me putting tons of stock in Arcane Austin and then I play the game and it's like, oh, this actually is like what the trailers are. It is very slow and boring, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's on May 2nd. So I'm glad we got a date for that finally. So pretty soon. What else? We got Elder Scrolls Online update, some new expansion called Necrom.
Minecraft Legends, it does get released that as well. 18th of April.
Yes, it did. This looks sick. This looks really cool. Like, so if you aren't familiar, Minecraft Legends is a like action strategy game, like an RTS almost, but a lot more action focused, spin on Minecraft. And they focused a lot on like PvP here, which looked really cool. I'm keen. I really liked Minecraft Dungeons, action RPG take on Minecraft. So I'm keen for another take on this sort of universe because I think there's just a lot you can do with this art style and these sorts of characters.
They could make a ton of different games from different genres just in Minecraft, which is what they're doing. So
It looks really good. And because it's a strategy game made for console, that's I think why it comes with more of an action focused, you know, twist, just to keep things interesting while you're playing with a controller. So
yeah,
it looks cool. It's out on April 18th. And this is out on PlayStation as well, obviously, because Minecraft has come to all platforms ever since Microsoft purchased them. I think considering the acquisition talks happening, it would be really stupid of Microsoft to be like, oh, this is the first Minecraft game that is only on Xbox. Like, I would just get regulators being like, excuse me?
Yeah, let's go.
But of course, it's on Game Pass. So if you're on Xbox or PC, you get it for that. Yeah. And that to me is the strategy that they should follow. And they probably will follow with Activision. So
And then we got a closer look at Forza Motorsports.
Forza,
which looks very cool, but there was no release dates, which I think
it's a bit of a bummer, and it kind of bleeds into another news story we have, because this is expected to come out first half of 2023. It seems that a delay will be announced imminently that will push it out of that. And you know, considering they just said 2023 with no indication of the year, it suggests that that's going to happen. I think Forza looks really good. I think visually it looks incredible, like if they get this going on the Xbox Series X and S, because it isn't coming to old Xbox consoles. You can only play it via cloud streaming, which is kind of neat. You can still play but yeah, it's gonna have 500 cars. Best part, it's gonna have Kai Lamy.
Nice.
Very first time in a Forza that we get Kai Lamy there, and they showed off a bunch of footage from Kai Lamy, and I'm keen to race around Kai Lamy. That's nice. That's dope. That was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, and yeah, just you've already said that it's reportedly delayed to Q3 or later. So I guess
we will see. Wouldn't be shocked. I mean, we're bound to get a new Starfield. They said beforehand that Starfield's going to get its own direct like thing like this specifically for Starfield, and I bet they will get an indication of a release date. And I also, just like Forza, don't expect that to come in the first half of this year. So.
I think, Xbox is already pretty busy the first half of the year anyway.
Busier than they were last year.
Yeah, so. We've got a Hi-Fi Rush now. We've got Minecraft Legends and Redfall. Like, that's already three big games. Really.
Yeah, it's big games. And I'm pretty sure at E3 they're going to show off a bunch more. Maybe not for this year, but for the future. So they kind of do. Phil Spencer said in a recent interview that they kind of realize that 2022 was way too lean.
It was empty. So, it was like
the only big release was Grounded. Can you believe it?
Nice.
Yeah.
And Pentiment, which was just like a subtle little in December.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Pentiment was more lucky that it was received as well as it was, than this is a marquee game we're going to get behind.
Yeah.
You know,
Cool. In other news, you're going to have to tell me about this. Annapurna published The Pathless out on Xbox and Switch next
week.
Yeah,
this is just a small thing. We're chatting about it before the show, but The Pathless is a game developed by a studio called Giant Squid and published by Annapurna Interactive. Giant Squid was started by the art director on Journey from that game company. And The Pathless is, I think, their second game because they did that diving game that I keep forgetting the name of. That was like Journey, but underwater.
Yeah, Abzu.
Then they did Abzu, that's the one. But then they've done The Pathless, which is like a very kinetic, parkour-focused like action game. It's like an open world and you run really fast and you've got this falcon and a bow and you shoot stuff and it's a really cool adventure exploration game. A lot of people say Forspoken, this is like a baby Forspoken, you know what I mean? in terms of like its kind of gameplay loop. So it's been on PlayStation for a while, since 2022, and PC. I mean, since 2020, sorry.
Yeah.
But now it is coming to both Switch and Xbox, and it will be on Game Pass. And nice. It's out on February 2nd. So it actually should have been on our release list, but I guess that hadn't been updated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Switch, do you like GoldenEye?
Phew.
Have you ever played GoldenEye? I've never played
GoldenEye. I never had an N64.
So if you don't know, GoldenEye 007 is an iconic N64 game for, I think, you know, because the game itself is very good, but also for that good N64 era of four-player split-screen co-op.
Yeah.
It's
like the progenitor of first-person split-screen multiplayer.
And it is now finally coming to NES Online. It is out already and on Game Pass. Didn't expect that, but that's pretty cool.
Two completely different versions of the game, though.
Yeah.
One is more of a remaster, whereas the Nintendo Switch one is like the original, the just being emulated. Yeah.
Mm. I will say, like, I played the original back in the day, and while I'm very keen to dive into this, I do not know if I'll play it to it from beginning to end, because I think it is dated. Like,
yeah,
this game is ancient.
This is a game from when was it released?
Like it must 26 be years ago. 90s, yeah. Oh my god, that makes me feel so old.
So 1997, yeah. Mm. I don't know. It's I think it's cool from a preservation point of view that you can play it, even though it's not, it seems that there's a lot of problems with the game in terms of like visuals that are not like just because like it's old, it's like it's actually something's balked in this thing, but at least it gives a lot of people the chance to play this game. I don't think I think like you said, a lot of people are going to play like the first level and be like, oh yeah, I remember this, and then stop. And there's very few people going to play this game online multiplayer, because the online multiplayer is only on Nintendo Switch, which apparently has its own problems. Like, the control scheme on the Switch is super bad and you can't change it, apparently, which is insane. It's cool that it's finally out. There was someone on Twitter, I can't recall who, that was explaining that there is a more robust remaster, almost akin to like what we consider remakes now, version of this that had been worked on for a long time and then got stuck in like development hell because of licensing issues.
Yeah.
So it's just there, it exists, and that's not the one we got.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a bummer. The visual enhancements on this re-release aren't the same as the GoldenEye remake. A version of that project leaked in 2021. It was a remake Rare made for the Xbox 360 before Nintendo quashed it because of rights issues. There's no word on whether the project is still officially in development. That's the one that it would have been great if we got, but that's not the one we have. So
nice. I mean, I'll give this a try.
Will you play GoldenEye? Let us know.
I'll try.
The only James Bond game I remember playing from that era, which is strange, is Tomorrow Never Dies on PlayStation 1, and that was like a third-person game. It was like third-person James Bond. It was weird.
This is the only James Bond I've played, and it was like actually good at the time. Like, I don't know. It's one of the things where at the time it was like, whoa, revolutionary. Today it's like, oof, really rough.
It's just old. It's a first-person shooter from nearly 30 years ago, of course.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is worth pointing out it was on the Nintendo 64, which had huge space limitations.
Yeah. So you can say, oh, this is 4K 60 FPS. It's like, okay, yes, a potato could run it at 4K 60 FPS.
On Nintendo News, though, a sealed... I just threw this in because it made me cry.
Oh my God, this was so horrible.
A sealed copy of Pokemon Yellow with thousands arrives damaged. So United States Customs absolutely destroyed a graded box copy of Pokemon Yellow for the Game Boy, said to be potentially worth over $10,000.
It was like one of the highest graded cards you could get, a 9.2 out of 10. Oh my God.
So
it's
looking at the video feed, there's a tweet here from somebody named Stephen Kick, who tweets, a friend of mine received the sealed and graded original copy of Pokemon Yellow. So US Customs broke the acrylic case, ripped and discarded the seal, sliced the front of the box off. And then, very jokingly, they added, maybe they weren't fans of at the Water Games. Like, I don't know.
Oh, my God.
It's sad. Can you imagine?
Yeah. It hurts. Just imagine like 100K just out of the window like that because Customs was a dick to you. And you can't do anything about it. Like,
yeah. This is. I'm like, well, how else are you supposed to ship it? Like,
oof.
I don't know.
It says, yeah, Weather Kick's friend will be compensated to make him down to if the shipment was insured. The U.S. Postal Service allows for collectibles to be insured based on value, so it's possible a claim could lead to the full value of the sealed Pokemon Yellow. Even without insurance, however, there may be enough evidence to show that USPS intentionally destroyed the game for a claim to go through.
Yeah.
Legalities are unclear given the powers U.S. customs agents have to dig through the mail to look for contraband.
Yeah,
if it's insured and you're like, this thing is worth X amount, you need to pay me. That is an even better result because now he doesn't need to look for a buyer. He just gets the money.
He just gets the mola. Yeah. Yeah, sad. And then last piece of news announced. I think this was just last night.
Yesterday, yeah.
Tomb Raider TV series coming to Amazon from Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
So Phoebe Waller-Bridge from Fleabag, and she's starring in the new Indiana Jones, reportedly developing a TV series based on Tomb Raider. Not to star in, she will be developing and writing the scripts for the series. Nice. She'll also executive produce. But yeah, that's what's being reported. There's been no official announcement. But yeah, that's cool. I mean, Phoebe Waller-Bridge has done writing a bunch. I think she did some writing on a recent James Bond film as well.
Oh.
So, yeah. I mean, it's not like this is her first time writing action.
I do love this era we are living through where there are so many video game adaptions in TV
shows.
Also,
just so many different ones. There's meant to be a new movie. Now there's a series. It's just like the Tomb Raider multiverse.
It just said Netflix has an upcoming anime series based on the Tomb Raider world as well. So, like Lara Croft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a... Hayley Atwell was Lara Croft in... The Adventure... Yeah, Lara Croft's Adventures on a Netflix series. Is it?
I don't know.
Yeah, Netflix has an... Netflix has an upcoming anime series based on the Tomb Raider world. But follow Lara Croft's adventures after the events of the Crystal Dynamics reboot trilogy. And it has Hayley Atwell as Lara Croft. Well, that's cool.
There you go. And on that is news.
News for this week. That means we are diving headfirst into questions. If you have a question for us, you can email us, checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com, or you can message us on any of our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat.
Nice.
What is on the docket for today?
We have a couple of questions. Let me just pull up Twitter because I saw a couple there. So from good pal Miles Morales, no, I'm kidding, @Miles_away, who asks, do you guys use a password manager? If so, which one? Looking for something with an affordable family plan.
So I did for a very long time use LastPass. But given their security breaches over the past couple of months where pretty much everything of theirs was breached, so I think their business model as a whole is kind of dead in the water. I've migrated over to one called Bitwarden, which is kind of does everything I wanted to, and It is hosted on Microsoft Azure servers. So like if that thing gets compromised, then you know that Microsoft itself got compromised.
Microsoft got hacked. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So yeah, I would use that. They have a family plan option. I have no idea how much it costs. I'm using a single one and I get by on the free option because it gives me all I need. Mm-hmm. And if you've been using a previous password manager, they have multiple ways to migrate over pretty seamlessly. It took me like 10 minutes. So nice. Yeah, would recommend.
I do not use one, which I know may draw some mild concern. But I have my own means of keeping track of my passwords.
Your means infuriate me.
Why do they infuriate you?
They're do so tell. Insecure. My God.
No, but let me tell you, I don't have... So I have many passwords, but they all follow some other structure. So I don't have all of them.
There's already problem number one, but okay.
But you don't know what structure it follows.
It doesn't matter. If one person finds it out, that's it.
Yeah, it's but like how would you figure it out? I know what my structure is and I break up my passwords accordingly.
Even Lenska's giving you shit. I can hear about it. She's like, I can hear.
You'll never get my stuff. I do find it concerning though, and this is funny enough why I've never used an app to keep track of my passwords for that very reason of like, what happens if the app gets compromised?
Totally possible. Yeah, totally
and
possible.
That happened. Now everyone who's using LastPass is like, oh shit, I've got to move over to somewhere else. So
and they advise you to change all your passwords. But I mean, this happens all the time to individual websites where they get exposed. You know, your password manager also alerts you to those certain things. So like if I log onto a website and use a password, it's like, hey, just want to let you know that A, you've used this password elsewhere, so that's not good. Yeah. B, this password was exposed in a hack like a month ago. You should change this password. So it's like, it's a more broad security measure as well. But I get what you mean. Like it's 100% LastPass, like their master passwords got like taken out. So like if anyone has that, they have access to all your passwords.
Listen, nothing will replace a good piece of paper locked away somewhere.
It's true. That's what a lot of people in crypto do. So yeah.
You know, just don't put your entire crypto in a hard drive and bury it in a landfill and spend years trying to dig it up.
I should really do something like that just for like sort of savings accounts or even just whatever crypto accounts I still have existing.
Mm.
Just like I should write that on a piece of paper because God forbid I like...
You lose that
have
wallet.
A bad car accident and then no one like Shani or my family can't access that money. So
yeah, good lord,
would suck. Yeah, maybe that's why Shani hasn't killed me yet. She can't access
she can't access your
my
Bitcoin
Luna account.
Damn
yet.
It. Another question from Miles. He asks, "Do you have any interesting predictions for 2023 in gaming? So will Microsoft and Activision Blizzard actually go through? Will the Switch successor be announced and or released, for example?" I don't know if any...
I think the Switch successor thing is a sure thing. It being announced is absolutely going to happen.
Oh yeah, I think it'll be announced. I don't know if it'll be released this year.
No. I don't think it will be released this year. I think it'll be near the end of the year, sort of like, this is the future of Nintendo. Mm. We're excited to share more with you in 2024.
Yeah. As for the Blizzard Activision...
Jesus, I don't know anymore, hey. Like,
I think it will happen. I just don't know when it will happen. Like at what point? Because it would be something for it to fall through like now. Like, damn.
The deadline for the big deadline is June. Like if it doesn't close before June, Microsoft owes Activision like $2 billion in a breakup fee. And the whole process, I don't know if the whole process starts again, but it kind of delays the process quite significantly. And to me, it seems almost impossible at this point that they are going to make that deadline because like, there are regulators that are only going to disclose their findings in like April and they're not letting Microsoft see early drafts of those proposals so that they can propose concessions in the meantime. So like the window of Microsoft's ability to react to things and appease regulators before that deadline seems scarily. Mm. Maybe they do it. I don't know. I think the deal will go through eventually. Yeah. Like Microsoft has too much in this to back away from this now.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, stranger things have happened. Nvidia had to pull away from the deal with ARM and pay SoftBank like $2 billion in a breakup fee. But I think that was a bit harder. Like, The regulators in that one were like very steadfast and like, we do not want this to happen. Like, we are so adamant that this should never happen. And Microsoft themselves were actually there arguing against NVIDIA, saying they do not want it to happen. And now NVIDIA says they're arguing against Microsoft with Sony, which is quite hilarious.
But can you imagine relationships work like this? It's like, Microsoft says to Activision, will you marry me? And they go, oh my God, yes. And then the wedding just takes too long to happen. And Activision says, well,
it's like, if there is anyone here who opposes this wedding, speak now forever, hold your peace. And like five people stand up.
Yeah, but Sony puts up there like, no, we don't agree with this. And they delay the whole process. And then Blizzard says, hey, Microsoft, we love you, but you owe us $2 billion now.
Yeah. Like you're sitting there, you've been at the wedding for 24 hours and your wife just looks at you. It's like, please, I can't do this anymore. I'm taking the ring.
Oh my God.
I'm taking the ring, also you have to pay for catering.
And then Activision Blizzard walks out the front door with Sony, like, oh my God.
When did they also take the wedding cake with them and they're like, you have to pay for this, but we're taking it.
I hate to see it.
And then the Sony's just in the last bleacher of the church, just chuckling to himself.
Going, yeah, everything went better than expected. And then we have two questions from Megs, who asks, when did gaming games as AAA, AA, B, and garbage come into effect, and why? I don't know.
I don't think it's a grading.
Yeah, I think it's more of a...
It's more an indication of budget.
Yeah, budget and scale of, well, not scale, but size of studio.
Listen, it's all made up. I'll tell you that much. But for context, like AAA always refer to big studio, big publisher, you know, a bracket of money, development money that is like the highest in the industry at the moment. Whereas AA is like a quarter to a half of that sort of workforce, sometimes much less budget.
Yeah.
And the scope of the game was much smaller. So much shorter game or just like, just more, less, I don't know, less big. I don't know how to describe it, you know. And then indie was all, shut up.
If only we had a word for that.
Get out of here. I don't write anymore. Oh my God. And then indie was always like independent studio, but that has become so muddied because they are now like indie publishers, and the very definition of an indie publisher strips away all meaning from indie. But I mean, it's happened in music, it's happened in movies. You get indie movies and that just really kind of describes arty movies with smaller budgets, you know?
Yeah.
But you get indie games now that are like developed by like 30, 40, 50 people, which would be like the size of a studio 20 years ago for a AAA game, you know, and they have the budget that matches that, and they have a publisher that helps with marketing. They're not indie anymore, in my view. But you look at a game and you're like, this is an indie game because it's a 2D pixel art game or whatever the fuck. Like, it's all made up. It's very inconsistent.
Even a good example is Hi-Fi Rush. Like, that's made by Tanglework Games, which for all intents and purposes is a AAA studio. But you look,
published by Microsoft Game Studios.
Yeah, but you look at the game and your knee-jerk reaction is like, this is either an indie slash double A game. But it's,
I would probably say that's a double A game because it's like smaller studio, well, smaller parts of the studio.
But you know what I mean? It's all depends on who you ask and how you define certain things. Because you could say like, this is made by 10 people at Tango Games, therefore it's an indie game. But it's like, no, it was published by
it's also bankrolled by Microsoft. Insane to think that's the case.
Yeah, you know? And then
it's the same with like No Man's Sky. Like Hello Games is an independent studio, and you're like, oh, okay, so No Man's Sky is an indie game. It's like, are you
no,
it was bankrolled by Sony. Like, it's not an indie game anymore.
Yeah, look at the entire catalog of I'm blanking now. Who's the big indie
Ori
publisher?
Is Ori an indie game?
No, but who's the big indie publisher that publishes all the indie games? Who did Cult of
Devolver Digital?
Devolver Digital. I'm like, those games aren't AAA, but they're definitely not indie.
Yeah, it's the same with Annapurna. The exact same thing.
Yeah,
it's all made up. You know, you know what's indie that I've played in the past couple of months? Signalis. Two people. Published by Humble Games. Cool. Published by Humble Games, but it's two people.
Available on Game Pass. You know what I mean? Therefore, it's double. No, I'm kidding.
You see, so is it muddy? Is it even indie? What is indie anymore? Because the problem is no one self-publishes anymore very rarely, because it is so fucking difficult. Like, self-publishing is like to try and get the sort of marketing behind you and do all of that admin yourself, it's almost insane, impossible to do alone. So these companies like Devolver and Annapurna and Microsoft to an extent come in and say, we will deal with that. You focus on making the game. Cool. You know, whether you want to call it indie or AA, ugh, you know. It's, but now I really, really get bugged by studios, big studios now. Like I think the initiative at Microsoft did this where they're like, Perfect Dark is the first AAA plus or quadruple A game. And it's like, fuck off. Like, go away. Are we- so much for your quadruple A game. It's not even like, every time we hear about it, it's in trouble. Yeah, quadruple A and wasting money. Hilarious. You know?
Cool. And then last question on a similar note, why the change of levels to biomes? Is this in reference to open world games that have huge areas to play in? I think it's also just,
it's 100% that, to be honest.
It's just like a naming convention. Like it's a biome because it is in an open world game.
I think levels just denotes a very specific, here's a start and an end.
Yeah.
Like also, whenever I think levels, I think Crash Bandicoot and I'm just like, you start the level here, you end the level.
But it's
here.
Also very like, I mean, obviously to your point, like Crash does have levels. There are many games that have levels, but it's also a very retro term because that's how games were structured back then.
Yeah. It was like five levels per world, five worlds per game. But it's very rudimentary.
I'm not going to turn to you in conversation and say, have you played the Las Vegas level in Horizon Forbidden West?
But I think that's exactly it. But even in a Crash Bandicoot sense, you could kind of like, if you think of Crash Bandicoot 3, you could be like, yeah, there's levels, but there's biomes because some levels all take place in the medieval setting. Some take place in the underwater setting. There's a biome.
I think your biome just denotes, you know, an environment or feel or theme.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just open world games. That's actually very fair points. You heard it here first. Crash Bandicoot has biomes. And
I mean, I think the discussion really came in with Returnal, where they were like, oh, what biome did you get in? But you could definitely refer to each of those as levels, level one or to level six. You know, I think it's interchangeable in a certain sense. But to your point, in an open world game, it is like, or like in a Zelda game, this is the water biome. This is the air biome. This is the fire biome. And, you know, in Ocarina of Time, those are denoted with temples, fire temple, water temple.
Yeah.
Don't know what the sky temple. I don't know.
You play the sky level.
The whole new Zelda game is just one big sky biome.
It's the sky biome. Oh my God. It's the sky biomes of Zelda games. I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. It could have been DLC. They just added a biome.
My goodness. But yeah, it's very much the same to me. The same conversation we had about double A and triple A in India. It's like, I think there's very specific instances, but it's like you could 100% refer to things as levels if you want to.
I think it's also just what becomes popular at the time. Like a lot of people say biome and then everyone's saying biome.
It's a buzzword. Yeah, that catches. Yeah. It would be fascinating to know who was the first person to use the word biome in a game. Like, I don't know.
Well, it's, what was it? Marvel Snap? I think it was Marvel Snap. There was something to do with I don't know if it was the locations or the lanes or something at the beginning of when that game first came out that everyone referred to it as something. And the developer of the game was like, oh, we do not call it that at all. Oh, it was the card pools. So everyone calls it a pool and they don't call it that. They call it something else completely. But it's like, does it even matter what you call it? Like if everyone is calling
I think they call it series. So it's series three. But it's funny because like I know of it as pool. If you hadn't pointed it out, I would have just always thought it's pool three. Pool
I always
four,
talk
pool
about
five.
It as pool. I mean, even on this store, they say series four card, but I say, oh, this is a pool four drop. You know, like it doesn't matter what the developer's intent is of calling it. It's like what people latch onto.
So what you're saying is that many years ago, some open world developer said, and here we have the water level, and somebody reported saying, oh, they shut off the water biome.
100%.
And they're like, no,
100%,
wait,
that's probably what happened.
That
yeah.
just happened.
Or when did levels turn into stages? When did it become this game is five stages as opposed to levels? What denotes a stage versus a level?
Looking forward to playing the next Mario, and the main menu says biome select.
Can't wait for the next Gran Turismo to say they don't have 700 tracks, they have 700 biomes. 700 biomes to race around.
Amazing. It's like, that's
our latest biome, Kyalami.
That's like dumb marketing buzzwords.
That is 100% dumb marketing bullshit. Like, yeah.
Well, there we go. That's all the questions. All on Twitter this week, funny enough. Nothing on Instagram, all Facebook, I didn't check our email. I don't think we have any emails, though.
I don't think we have any email, though. I've been checking our emails a lot this week.
I think I like to believe that many people have questions and they realize how long our email name is. They're like, nah.
Yeah, fuck this noise.
It's cool. I don't have to ask this question.
If you want to send us an email, our ridiculously long email, you can email us checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. But you can also just message us on all of our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat on pretty much anywhere. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all of them places. So, yeah.
Oh, damn.
That's been episode 212 of Checkpoint Chat. As always, thank you so much for listening. Mm-hmm. It's been a great week. You've had a great week. You're going to have another great week going forward. Mm-hmm. And until next time, we will see you. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Enjoy load shedding. Peace out.
Fun shade. Yeah, fun shade. Good Lord, it's so hot.
Don't worry. If you're looking for shade, Eskom will provide.
I wish load shedding would turn off the sun.
Oh my goodness, I don't. Let me tell you, just go swim. It's the best thing.
Have a good weekend.
I was going to say, you must come join us at the Zoo Lake swimming pool. It is.
I'm keen. That pool looks phenomenal.
It is really great.
Yeah.
Cool.
Thank you so much as always, and we will see you next time. Checkpoint Chat. Goodbye.
Goodbye.